Chi'n fai y pwrth gwyngu eich gwgeir o chi'n drwb o'ch llan tis i liw gogoch.
Welcome to The Max, a podcast for leaders and entrepreneurs. Hosted by Fifma Krammer.
Hi there, this is episode number 10 of The Max podcast. I have a very interesting guest. I made this one with care and love. And the one thing I would like you to do is subscribe to my channel. I will be very grateful if you do. But with no further ado, let's start the interview.
Well, hi, Ben. Thanks for being here. I bought your book a few months ago, and I thought, well, I'm going to try and see if I can get this great guy in the Meet the Max podcast. And here you are. So I'm very glad you're here. So let me introduce you. You are a writer, speaker, and so-called comfort zone leaver. And you write about practical philosophy, mental health, and adventure, and you have a blog. I wrote a book, and that's why we are going to talk about, called How to Be Comfortable with Being Uncomfortable, 43 Weird and Wonderful Ways to Build a Strong, Resilient Mindset. And you love to do difficult things, that's for sure. And you believe we can become better and more alive human beings by challenging ourselves in different ways. And the whole project of those challenges started you being in the States with your girlfriend, and you had a heavy panic attack. Is that so?
Yeah, that's right. Well, firstly, thank you so much for inviting me on. It's great to be here to chat with you. But yeah, the whole project came off the back of really bad anxiety.
Yeah.
And I was in the States, we were on a road trip, and suddenly I just started having these panic attacks. But at the time, I didn't know what a panic attack was, and it just felt very overwhelming. And when you're unfamiliar with that kind of anxiety and what it can do to your body, it manifests in very physical ways, it can be pretty terrifying. So that was really the start of this whole journey, and ultimately led me to write a book and figure out how to deal with that. How do I deal with this condition that I suddenly started experiencing?
Okay, so because I know when people first encounter an anxiety attack, they really think they're going to die. So did you end up in a hospital when you were in the United States?
No, I didn't end up in hospital, but it did feel like I was dying. It was very, very intense, very overwhelming. And it came in waves, but the waves were, there wasn't really much of a break between them. So you'd have a panic attack, and then there would be a little bit of a break from that, and then it would come again, and it just kept on happening. And it was just at the time, I guess, the fear of the unknown as well. First time, I was so poorly educated on mental health, I didn't know anything about it. So actually that made the whole situation worse, and I had no tools and tricks to deal with it. And that was really one of the key learning experiences from this whole project, has been figuring out how to use tools and tricks to deal with anxiety and to deal with, I guess, life like difficulties.
Yeah. So it's quite intriguing, because I read that you went to a doctor, and he said, well, you're with panic attacks. Well, you didn't go to a psychologist. You did something else.
Well, basically, yeah. So I went to the doctor, and it was officially diagnosed as generalized anxiety disorder. And there was a series of things that I could do. And obviously therapy was an option, and there were lots of potential things that could happen. But I decided that before I committed to anything, I wanted to read and educate myself so that I knew exactly what was happening. And that just turned into this kind of manic reading like binge, where I consumed so much material and just really got into all of these different subjects, ranging from psychology to self-help to philosophy, all these autobiographies, anything that might help me, and reading about mental health. And it was through this journey that I came across Stoicism, which is one of the philosophies that really helped me. And lots of the other ideas really helped, but I guess Stoicism was really one of the key concepts that resonated with me. And from there, I kind of got into it and started exploring it. And there's this concept about stepping outside of your comfort zone can help you to become a more resilient individual. And that felt so like counterintuitive to where I was. I was in such this panicky space that actually leaning into difficulty and doing scary things didn't seem like it would be a particularly fun thing to do. But that just got my mind working, and I thought it was so interesting. And the Stoics used to challenge themselves in all these unique ways to build resilience. And I kind of fell in love with that idea, and I started testing it out. I like started really, really small and did all these little things, and that built up over time. And suddenly when my confidence came back and I started to believe in myself again, and I could see that the anxiety attacks had stopped and that I was actually a little bit more in control of myself, it just snowballed from there. And then I just kind of pushed myself and started doing these slightly more bizarre challenges and more demanding challenges. And it grew from there, and it completely changed my life.
Well, it makes me think of saying of Marcus Aurelius, who said, "What stands in the way comes the way, becomes the way." So that's what you put in practice, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's easy in hindsight to see that, because at the time it was just devastating. It was a really, really dark place to be in. But actually, I honestly can say now it was the best thing that's ever happened to me, because it helped me to understand myself, and it's kind of given me this this path as well, this deeper understanding. Yeah. So it's sometimes those things that happen to us that we think in at the time it's just absolutely terrible. But yeah, when we look back on it, it's such a pivotal moment. Mm. So yeah, it's interesting.
So besides Stoicism, you're also influenced by Buddhism. So what's the most important thing you got out of your that way of looking at your anxiety?
So Buddhism I found really interesting as well. Lots of ideas within Buddhism that were particularly helpful. Mm. There's a lot of heavy emphasis on living in the moment, and an emphasis on meditation, which is actually really, really helpful. Observing how your mind works and trying to be able to sit with that and becoming aware of the way that you think about things. Yeah. So Buddhism was great for that. And they talk a lot about impermanence within Buddhism and how life equals change, and whatever situation you find yourself in, it's going to change. And it's just trying to remember that and embrace it, and also at the same time, be grateful for where you are. And it's that living here and now, that's focusing on the present. But there's loads of lessons within Buddhism, and I guess I just kind of pick and choose the elements that I find interesting and just try and use them.
So, one of the things I really like about your book, we know a lot of people start a bucket list and the things they like to do before they die. And I don't have a bucket list, but I know a lot of people have. Yeah. And you started the opposite, so anti-bucket list. So all the things you really don't want to do. And I know for sure a lot of people will say, "Are you mad? You know, are you crazy?" So tell me, how did you come about with this idea of anti-bucket list?
So I really like this idea, and a lot of people pick up on it because it's quite unusual and it's counterintuitive, and that's the thing which is quite interesting for everyone, really, because we've got the bucket list, you know, we want to do these things before we die, but then the anti-bucket list is a list of things that we would never want to do because they scare us, or we find that they might be too difficult. Yeah. And as adults, it's very easy for us to avoid doing them. Mm-hmm. We can let our fears we can put them over there and just not look at them and just let them do what they want. But it's this kind of deliberately seeking out those things because they're going to be tough, because they're going to be probably a bit unpleasant as well. There's a huge amount of growth that can come off the back of it. Yeah. So to give you an example so that it makes sense, like I had a huge fear of needles. Needles just terrified me. And that was something that I wanted to play around with. And so therefore it's on the bucket list, the anti-bucket list of things I don't want to do. I don't want to go and unnecessarily get needles inserted into me. So how do we do that? Well, we go and have acupuncture. So acupuncture was a great experience because I was very scared before I did it. But going through it and having needles put in your face, in your top of your head, in your stomach, all over you, in your legs and feet. But after having done that several times, it just changed my relationship with it. And it changed my relationship with that fear. It's kind of working through it, pushing through it, and actually proving to myself that I could do that, that I could do something scary. And that's why the idea of the anti-bucket list came about. And it's I like it. It feels like there's so many things on there, and you know, it's trying to turn things that we are afraid of or that we think we can't do into a form of play. And fear and play are two words that you never really put together. And that's something that is just quite interesting, and the growth as well that comes off the back of it. When you do something scary and you prove to yourself that you can handle it and you lean through it, the validation and the confidence that you get off the back of it is profound. So I think that that's why the anti-bucket list is important.
So I think that's a good point, because you say, well, be playful with your fear. Normally, when we encounter fear, we get blocked and paralyzed. And play is the opposite, I think. It's movement and being creative. And I think that's a very good combination to play around a little bit around your fear. So that's why you did those challenges as well, to learn you to be more playful around your own fears.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, so in the book generally across my journey, I've been doing lots of different types of challenges. Yeah. Now, not all of them are anti-bucket list challenges. Some of them are things that I've wanted to do, but maybe I've just been too intimidated. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, like running a marathon. That was something that I'd always wanted to run a marathon, but I'd never really followed through with it, and I'd never had the confidence to do it. So again, that's something that would have gone on a bucket list, but there's so much, again, so much growth that can be done. Well, that can be gained from experiencing that or pushing yourself, and that self-limiting belief that I initially had that, you know, would I be able to do it? It's questioning that. So there's lots of different things that you achieve by challenging yourself, you know, whether it's a fear or whether it's something that's intimidating that you're trying to lean into, or whether it's just something that you don't think you can do. Yeah. And it's that self-limiting belief. So there's loads of different types of challenge. And I think it's just about mixing them all together. And just, so challenge is really the key thing here, just stepping outside of your comfort zone in all these different ways.
So you have, as an example, 43 challenges in your book. So I was just wondering, how did you create your own challenge list? And how do you make sure it's challenging enough? Because I was thinking about my own anti-bucket list, but it's quite difficult to really, you know, it's a strange thing. On one hand, you like to put something on the list, but the other hand say, well, rather not.
Yeah, of course. But the thing is, just putting it on the list in the first place is a good start, isn't it? Yeah. And you can just acknowledging it. You know, that's the first step in anything. But for me, the purpose of having all of these different challenges was to give me a diverse way to step outside of my comfort zone. So I'll always look for things that are very different, and they need to vary in commitment, because if you end up with too many big challenges, you can end up not actually doing them or completing them. And that in itself is not particularly helpful, because I think if you set your goals too high, well, I say too high, but too many big goals can be problematic. So I kind of mixed it with I had big goals and then I had small goals, things that you could do in 5 minutes. For instance, perfect example, take a cold shower. Well, that's a brilliant challenge.
People will say, well, that's not that difficult, but I was laughing because the first challenge you write down in your book is about taking cold showers. And well, I was planning to take cold showers for ages already, but I'm postponing it every time.
Okay.
But I like all kinds of challenges. I can run a marathon or other things, but cold shower, I really have a hard time doing it. But yesterday, inspired by you and inspired by preparing for this interview, I thought, I'm going to do it now. So yesterday, I took my first cold shower.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
How was it?
Well, it was a challenge for me, but I was really glad I did. And it was not that cold, you know? That's so strange. I really thought, oh, I'm not going to survive this almost. I know it's not true, of course, but it was okay.
Yeah, well, that's it. I think it's our perception of what we, you know, we think that it's going to be worse than it is. And that happens with a lot of things, not just the cold. I think the cold shower is a perfect example of that. It's that little bit of mental resistance that you're working with. Yeah. And it's just, you know, of course, any of these challenges and these ideas you can make harder. So if you, the cold exposure, essentially that's something we can do very quickly. It's just a couple of minutes. But if you wanted to make it harder, you might have a cold bath or you might go wild swimming. Mm. If you wanted to make it really hard, you might go ice swimming or you might have an ice bath. So there's loads of, there's degrees of difficulty and you can play around with that as well. So
a little bit like exposure therapy. And well, I know with exposure therapy, people who are afraid of certain things or animals, they expose themselves step by step. But it seems that you skip those small steps and just go all the way.
Well, it might seem like that, but it, I guess it's just, it's over time though, because right at the start of the journey, loads of very mundane things would put me out of my comfort zone and make me feel very, very uncomfortable. So for instance, walking to, this is the one, the example I use all the time, but walking to the bench in my local park felt overwhelming, which, I mean, that's not really a challenge for the majority of people, unless you're in a particularly bad mental space. So for me, that was one of the sort of beginning challenges, the things that I set myself, which is very, very small. And then when I did that, when I sort of stepped out of my comfort zone, forced myself to go and do that, it just compounded over time. And then you end up doing things that people think that are ridiculous, or that, that people will say to me, oh, I could never do that. But then it's just over time, you just, it's like that fear exposure that you were talking about. You expose yourself to the things that you're afraid of, and slowly your relationship with it changes. So that's kind of what's happened. But there's still, you know, there's still a lot for me to learn, and there's loads for me to do in the future. So it's been an interesting journey, but I feel that there's been a lot of growth.
Must be. So one of the crazy challenges, I think it is, it's a really mental, it's training yourself on mental resistance and self-discipline, and sleeping on the floor in your own house. Besides your own bed, it's real. How did you make it up?
Well, this is from Stoicism.
Oh, I guess it's Stoic exercise, or not?
So the Stoics would do all of these great things, you know, exposing themselves to different kinds of adversity. Cold exposure, heat exposure. They would fast, sleep on the floor. They would practice living a very very restricted lifestyle for a couple of days, like practice poverty, all of these different situations. But sleeping on the floor was one of the things they did. So that's taken directly from Stoicism. And it's a funny one. It's a mental one, isn't it? It's because you've got the bed right next to you.
Yeah, unbelievable. It's quite an insane exercise. But and one of the other things you did is it's quite popular, I think. It's early riser. To rise early in the night, you planned before, so 2 hours before you need to. So you still do that?
Yeah, so I still get up really early. I find that sometimes, well, your body clock adjusts, but when you first start doing it, it can be tricky, and that's where the challenge element came in. But I think it's also in terms of being creative and having time to yourself to achieve whatever it is that you want to achieve in a day. There's nothing quite like the morning, and having a morning routine. I really love that. And again, this is a very Stoic thing. The Stoics used to have like a morning and evening routine. So I think the morning routine is a great way to set yourself up for the day. So I really love that. And I use that time to write and to exercise. Yeah. And various things. My routine changes over time. There's usually a cold shower in there somewhere and some kind of meditation as well.
You still, you're still able to pronounce Will's longest train station?
Yes. So that was it. That, again, that's a smallish challenge. And it's just, you know, a little bit of, I guess, the best way to describe it is it's a small thing to do, to learn how to pronounce a difficult word. But it's just, it's a quick thing that can take, you know, a couple of days. And it's just about that dealing with a little bit of resistance and trying something unfamiliar and learning how to push yourself a little bit. And it does. And the end goal is small. It's not the same as running a marathon. It's just learning a word. Yeah. So it's quite fun. So this station is in North Wales. It's the longest train station in the world. It's called Cranfaia Porthgwyngyll Gwgerwch yn Drwbwch Llanty Siliog o Gogoch.
You're still able to pronounce it.
The sign, you should see the sign on the like, it's pretty much the whole length of the station. And in the town, they feel like the football team has the name, and it goes all the way around the badge, and it's just, it's everywhere. It's quite a nice, it's quite a nice place to go and visit, I think.
Yeah, so it's not the same, but you said, well, learning a different language. And well, we can think about a lot of other languages, but you took the top of the bill language almost, Japanese. So you learned Japanese for a year.
Yes, well, I've continued to do that. Japanese was, again, this was more of a bucket list thing, but it also was a proof to myself that I can do something really difficult. Mm-hmm. So I started studying Japanese, and it came from, I do love Japan, so it wasn't just a random choice. And it's so brutally difficult that you have to have the right mindset when you're learning it. And it's just, it's relentless, and it's, you know, it's tough, but that's been a very rewarding process, and seeing my ability change over time and being able to hold a conversation in Japanese it's been huge progress. And not last 2019, before all the lockdowns and everything happened, I had, in December, I was in Japan, and I only used Japanese the whole time I was there. And I've never ever been able to do that with any language. So for me, that's progress, because the Brits are notoriously bad for learning other languages. So it's it was very good, a good experience.
So, of course, there are a lot of lessons you learned from this 1 year process, and it's ongoing, I believe. But can you mention one of those lessons you learned?
So, what would be the most important lesson, you think?
Yeah,
I think probably the key take home is that experiencing something like anxiety and being in a dark place and feeling that everything is terrible it's not as bad as I perceived it to be. In hindsight, as I said earlier, in hindsight, it was the greatest thing that has ever happened to me. And although it was a particularly difficult experience, it was an extremely important experience. And I think whatever we face, whenever it's difficult, whenever it's challenging, whenever we're in a place that is making us feel uncomfortable, I think it's important to zoom back and try and think about the bigger picture and trying to get some perspective, and actually seeing that this could be a catalyst for incredibly positive things in your life. Yep. Maybe you've just gone through a really bad breakup, but you're so caught up in that moment that it's hard to see actually through the other side of it. This has been a blessing in disguise. And I think that's something that when we're facing extreme difficulty and adversity, I think it's trying to get that perspective, because we don't know what's over the other side of the fence. That's something that I've taken away from this whole thing.
Nice. So you say that you learn to really look the fear in the eye instead of avoiding it.
I would say so as well. Yeah, but it's an ongoing thing, because it's not like I'm not afraid of things anymore. I'm afraid of stuff all the time, but it's a process rather than an end destination. I'm still afraid of a lot of stuff, but it's just trying to systematically look at those things and just try and push yourself, and it's ongoing. I think that's probably the best way of thinking about it.
So it wasn't your goal to never experience fear anymore.
I don't think you can.
No.
I don't believe anyone on the planet can not experience fear, unless maybe there will be some situations where you read about people who have like a neurological conditioning where they might not actually, their brain might not be able to process fear in a certain way. But I think, you know, the majority of human beings, that's just a perfectly natural part of being human. It's how you deal with it.
Yeah.
That's the important thing. Mm. And it's something that you need to keep doing, because otherwise I believe it's like any skill and anything, that if you want to be able to maintain it, you've got to keep doing it. So if you want that progress, you've got to seek out those challenges.
And it has to do with the self-limited beliefs we sometimes have, and well, that you can, if you can really practice, that you can be amazed how different the reality was from your perceived reality. So you're going to check what you had in your mind. Mostly, you talk about irrational fear, I believe.
I think the way that we perceive things is hugely important, and especially if you have somewhat of an anxious mindset. Yeah. Or a disposition that's slightly anxious or negative, it's very easy for us to create these stories in our heads about how we think a situation is going to play out, or how we think reality is. And actually, that's just our current perception of reality. It's not a true representation. It's not objective. And we all have these subjective lenses through which we view the world. And I think it's just trying to get that objectivity in there somewhere, and trying to step back and seeing, hang on, am I being rational about this? Is this fear rational or is it irrational? Is perfectly rational to be afraid of stuff.
Yeah.
But what is it that you're afraid of? And that it's just kind of drilling into that and exploring it as well.
Yeah. I believe one of the things you mentioned that you were surprised or relieved to discover that everyone has something to deal with. They have to deal with.
That's it. I think because when I started talking, because I was very private about this. Interestingly, some of my friends didn't even know that I'd been experiencing really bad anxiety until they read my book. And then they were like, oh, wow, I can't believe you didn't ever say. But it was through that, through the process of actually talking about it, and in those early stages as well, talking, suddenly you realize that, you know, lots of people are like, oh, yeah, I experienced that. That happened to me. Or, yeah, you know, I get depressed. All of these different things. Suddenly you realize that actually everyone has some thing that they're dealing with or that they're facing, and it will be, obviously there's a spectrum of how acute that is or how difficult it is, that the thing that they're dealing with. But I think it's just that, you know, if you're open about it, you realize how many people are in a similar situation. So I think it's so important to be open and to talk about it. And I do believe that the mental health stigma is changing, which is a great thing. There's still a lot around it, but I think that it's moving in the right direction. A lot of people are being more open about their mental health, and it's so important.
So did you have your publishing of your book was also one of your challenges?
You know what? It wasn't actually. This was a way for me to document everything, and then I just started writing, and like I've had a few writing projects in the past that never really went anywhere. So half finished things and loads of ideas, so it was really nice to put this down into this project, and it's been so lovely to put it out into the world. And I've loved the process of writing a book. It's been so rewarding, and it's lovely to get feedback from readers. So many people message me about their experiences, and they tell me about their challenges. And one of the key things in the book is to encourage people to figure out their own challenges. And the 43 are just a small snapshot of some of the things that I had done. But I think that one of the key take homes is for people to figure out what would personally challenge them. So I love hearing about different people's challenges, and sometimes I get some wacky photos and stuff. So it's great. It's really nice. And it's really fun to be able to have that two-way conversation, because when you write a book, it's just you and the page, and it's just, there's a little bit of feedback maybe in those initial stages and when you're writing it, and then when you start working with the publisher. But really, it's when it gets out into the world and the readers start to comment and everything. So it's been a really nice process. It's very exciting.
I know it's an ongoing process, and tell me it's not true, but you ran your marathon in your garden. Is that true?
It is. This was one of the most recent ones. Yes, I did.
Oh.
During lockdown. So during lockdown in the UK over the summer of 2020. Well, hang on, it was April time 2020. We had this national lockdown. No one was allowed to go outside, really. It was very strict. So there were lots of things I wanted to do. I trained for a marathon, and it was actually the day of the London Marathon.
Okay.
I ended up doing the marathon in my garden. And my garden's so small, it's 7 meters long. So I can't remember the exact number now, but it was over 4,000 lengths of my garden. You run from my back door to the fence and then back and then back and then back. So I did that over 4,000 times. And honestly, the hardest thing about it was you can't pick up any momentum. So you're just, it was such a slow marathon, and the monotony of it as well. But that was another layer of challenge. And that wasn't my first ever marathon, though, because I think that would have been really difficult for the first one.
It was the records thing, if you did your marathon in your garden.
It was a crazy experience, but it was great. And during that time as well, I did I climbed Mount Everest on my stairs, which was another one in a similar vein where I went up and down my stairs. I think it was 2,137 times, and that equates to the height gain and descent of climbing Mount Everest.
Very exhausting, I think.
my girl, because we were working from home, my girlfriend was working on the table in the front room, so she's working at her laptop and I'm just kind of going up and down the stairs, just driving her slowly insane.
She's still with you?
She is, yeah.
One of the things I heard you say is that and I think that's a very important point, is that the world is changing rapidly in our lives. And we all have challenges. Well, we certainly have challenges now worldwide. And we have to work on it collectively, of course, because otherwise things don't change. But you have to save yourself first before you can save others. So that's a little bit your message as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think one of the big messages in the project is I think that everyone should have some kind of system in place to deal with adversity, because we're all going to experience adversity. That's like, what do they say? Death and taxes are the two things, and change. Those are the things that we're all going to experience. But adversity is also on the list. You can't escape it. It will come in whatever. We don't know what way that's going to be. So I think having some kind of system or something in place, some set of ideas that are helpful, and we can pick and mix where we get those ideas from. But testing them out in the real world, to test them with challenges, to know that they work, means that they're going to be there for you when you encounter something that's particularly challenging, that's a curveball, because life is great at throwing curveballs at us. And I think last year was the perfect example of that. All of these things can happen that are outside of our control. So what do we have that we can do to manage that? And also, yeah, you're right about the, look after yourself first, because how can you effectively work in a society if you as an individual are struggling? It's very hard for you to be able to support those around you that might need your support. It's hard for you to support society at large if you haven't figured out how to look after yourself first. So it's that, even on an airplane, put your mask on first before you help everyone else. So I think there's a little bit of self-care that needs to go in place. And when we get our mindsets in the right place, then it's easier for us to all kind of work together collectively.
Yeah, true. Nicely said. So you wrote a book. You're a public speaker. Well, that was also one of your challenges. But what comes next?
So There's lots of ideas. There's lots of books that I want to write. So I'm working on my next book at the moment.
Okay.
I can't talk too much about it. But there's something coming in soon. Well, not soonish, but there's something happening at the moment. And then there's some other projects as well on the horizon. So there's lots of things that are going to happen. And I think as we see in 2021, when things change a little bit and public spaces open up and there's more public speaking opportunities, I'd like to get into doing a little bit more of that, getting out a bit more, being very much cooped up. So it'd be good to get out and do some more challenges. And of course, it's that ongoing thing. There's lots of challenges that I'd like to continue to do and new challenges to have a go at.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Ben, thanks a lot for this interesting talk. And
well, thank you.
I wish you a lot of fun with all your other challenges. What's the next one? Small one thing?
The next challenge. Well, at the moment, I'm trying to hold my breath for... it's basically the Wim Hof method. But
okay.
I've read Breath by James Nestor this year, and he talks a lot about free diving. So it's very interesting how these free divers can hold their breath for a ridiculous amount of time. Mm-hmm. So I've just been playing around with that. It's just a small little thing. So, but there's lots of other things. But yeah, that's what I'm interested in at the moment.
Thank you very much for this talk.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me on. It's been great to chat to you today.
Thanks for joining me today. If you'd like to hear more about me and the Max, go to themax.partners and don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss an episode.